the option not to murder him. I'm going to choose to not choose that, Blaze said. She set down her tea and stared at Blaze. You too. Don't look at me like that. I won't enjoy it, unless we make him slip in a puddle or something. You can't just kill a man for disagreeing with you. Really, Blaze said, isn't that what all killing is about? Who's going to stop us? Her lips contracted to a tight line. You should. You should know better. Warriors don't stab each other in their beds. The same is true if you're fighting in the field or in the council hall. This is simple calculus, Dante said. If we kill him, one man dies. If we leave him be, thousands of Norren will be killed and enslaved. You don't know that. She stood from her bench, pacing the snug room. None of us knows the future. The only certainty is death. That's why we must always act in life in a way that will make us proud in death. Blaze slurped the last of his tea. I'd be pretty proud if we cut this fight off at the roots. This has worked for us before, Dante said. He gazed at his hands. It isn't pretty, but sometimes it's necessary. Decisions like these are what define you. Lyra crossed her arms and turned to the door. I don't think I want to be part of this. Then it's time for you to make a choice, Dante said. This is who we are. When we need to, this is what we do. If that's not you, you can leave at any time. Nothing's keeping you here. Except my honor. And with her back to them, she turned her head over one shoulder. But I suppose you'd only laugh at that. Of course not, Blaze said. Not while you're standing right there. Morn cleared his throat with a thunderous rumble. I don't think anyone will judge you for going your own way. The room was silent. Lyra nodded twice, as if to herself, and retook her seat. I may yet. But if Jacobs has in fact betrayed us, then it is our right to take revenge. Dante lifted his eyebrows, reached for his loon. Guess I'd better raise Callie. Why in the world would you do that? Blaze said. Because he's in charge of this whole thing. Do you think we're making the right decision? Not really, no. But I figure we haven't destabilized a region's governing body recently, so we'd better go ahead with it anyway. Blaze rolled his eyes. Well, what's Callie going to say? Either, yes, go ahead and do that thing you were already planning to do, or, no, that's so dumb that if it were a person, it would forget what food is for. And if you do it after I've told you not to, I'll wear your skin for socks. Would that actually stop us? What's the point? When you put it like that, I guess there isn't one. Dante turned to Lolligan. Find out if this is real, then, and ready the black flag. Dante's attempts to sleep through the morning were thwarted by a steady clamor of boatsmen hollering their approach, knocks on the front door, and storms of laughter drifting from the rooms below. It sounded as if half the merchants of Greater Galador had spontaneously decided to pay Lolligan a visit. Dante didn't need to be told the truth, that they'd been invited over so Lolligan could determine whether they were serious about wanting to murder the leader of their order. This being the case, Dante spent most of the day in his room, venturing out only to visit the kitchen or one of the bathrooms that emptied into the lake. Instead, he read passages from Lolligan's copy of The Cycle of Aron, which was a more recent translation than the one they favored in Narashtovik, and a first-hand account of the Rafting Wars, an 800-year-old conflict fought between the long-ago tribes of Galador's lakes. Contrary to the title, these back-and-forth raids had primarily featured canoes and outrigger sailboats. The few bamboo rafts employed by increasingly desperate warriors had proven difficult to control and easy to destroy. Yet, rather than accepting repeated offers of peace, the three tribes who'd used the quick-to-build rafts had pushed on until the very end, provoking their rivals into a final counter-strike that had left every man, woman, and child of the three tribes dead. Dante finished just after sunset and wandered his room, contemplating another trip to the kitchen, even though he wasn't hungry. As he considered whether there was any meaning to the extinct tribe's steadfast refusal to quit fighting, Lolligan knocked on the other side.
"I couldn't exactly ask them outright," the merchant said. "For the same reasons, they couldn't answer outright either. But the offer is legit."
"How do you know?" Dante said.
"Their anger. It felt genuine. Real enough to hold on to."
"Got anything more concrete than that?"
"Possibly."
Lolligan touched the points of his mustache, swaying absently from foot to foot.
"I saw my friend Ulwin today. She's a good woman. Harvests bamboo from the mountains. There's a lot you can do with bamboo. Chairs, chicken coops, interior doors if you're not too picky. You can even eat it if you cut off the right parts and boil it long enough. No one else bothers with it on a large scale because they think bamboo is just for those too poor to afford stone or hardwood. But that's exactly what makes it worth Ulwin's while. 2 decades of bamboo has earned her a small fortune. Her vision is just what the Tagvog needs. But because her fortune's small, and her product isn't the one they use or favor, the Tagvog will never make Ulwin more than a peripheral member."
"Everyone's frustrated with their position sometimes," Dante said. "Their solution usually isn't murder, unless they're in the Assassin's Guild."
"That isn't what tipped me off. That's the context behind the story she told me. A story everyone in Galador already knows."
Lolligan pointed to the history book on Dante's table.
"Did you read that?"
"It was fascinating. It's hard to imagine a time so long ago.
After that war, the tribes held a few more, and then discovered everyone else in the world seemed to want our tea, too. So, instead of raiding each other's villages, we came together to raid the world's coffers. The city of Wending began to take shape. To keep order, it was decided to elect a tyrant every 3 years. One man who had to be obeyed no matter what your tribal or family loyalties. This system has its snags, but it worked smoothly for several generations, until the election of a man named Cayman. Cayman was a tea man. Self-made, worked for years as a sailor and bodyguard, then started his own farm, wound up one of the wealthiest men on the lake. Everyone loves a man like that. When he ran for tyrant, he was elected easily. At that time, the lakes and their cities all flew different flags. They all had their own tolls and taxes and regulations about what could come in and what could go out. To Cayman, this was terribly inefficient. Just as easily as he'd bought out the farms that made his fortune, he spent the next 3 years conquering, absorbing, and allying with every town, tribe, and county on the lakes. For the first time, Galador was united. He went unopposed in the next election. Not too surprising. Nor all that surprising when he announced his plans to annex the Eastern Plains. Some people thought it would be easy. Just nomads, thataways. They'll run right off. But others weren't so sure. Regardless, Cayman sent a legion over the mountains. Presumably it was a disaster."
"Presumably?" Lolligan nodded.
"Galador never heard from them again. But who knows? Maybe the soldiers all deserted and married 5 wives apiece and lived very happy lives. Again, regardless, Cayman assembled an even larger force. This time his doubters outnumbered his supporters, but what could they do? He'd been elected. Still, the lakes had been weakened in the wars of unification. So far as they knew, the First Legion had been massacred to the last man, and Cayman's second wave was only 3 times as large. A few of the nobles feared another loss would leave us helpless against a counterattack. They held a meeting to decide whether to assassinate Cayman. After the meeting, they held a vote. Do you know what happened then?
Dante hunched his shoulders.
They killed the hell out of him.
They left him be. They let him march into the east. His army was destroyed. The nomads, having enough, sent back a force of their own late in the summer. Galador was theirs by winter. 100 years later, Narashtivik conquered the nomads and Galador too, and another 100 years after that, some upstart barbarians from the western woods destroyed Narashtivik and took Galador for themselves. We've been owned by outsiders ever since.
Lolligan rubbed his throat.
That's the story my friend Ulwin told me. The story every citizen of Galador knows.
I suppose that's convincing enough, Dante said.
Also, after that, she told me she and some others had been setting aside a fund for years, and were ready to hire 300 mercenaries from around the lakes as soon as the black flag flies.
Dante didn't know whether to laugh or strangle him.
They've got a private army in the works.
You left that till the end because why?
Lolligan smiled sharply, spreading his fingers wide.
Because that is how a salesman closes the deal. Are you buying?
All the way, Dante said. Run up the flag. The flying of the flag wasn't half as dramatic as Blaze would have liked. To conceal it from all eyes but the only pair that mattered, Lolligan waited until nightfall, then sent a servant to the roof, flag in hand. Dante and the others remained inside. Somewhat resentfully, the same servant returned to the roof 15 minutes later, after midnight, to take the flag back down. In the morning, Lolligan found a scrap of black fabric pinned to the front door. Following breakfast, most of the household squeezed into Lolligan's boat and headed for the city. Lolligan was off to hire a half dozen new servants, men whose arms would bulge under their sleeves. Fan headed toward the hills to make the rounds among his wealthy friends and gather any gossip concerning Jacobs, Cassander, and whatever else was worth knowing. Blaze and Morn holed up in a dockside pub to watch the traffic from the lake for Jacobs, or anyone close to him, with the intent of following them into the city. And accompanied by Lyra, Dante headed for the city's main library. His purpose was twofold. First, to brush up on any local poisons that might be surreptitiously introduced to Jacob's food or water, and second, to find out whether the Merchant King had been foolish enough to register a copy of his manor's floor plan with the city archives. It wasn't out of the question. Though the notion was rarely spoken aloud, a rich man's manor was often thought of as a monument to himself, and gifting archives with records of that monument, its meaning, its history, its architecture, even its cost, was a way to gild its legacy in local lore. Not that it would be wise to ask about poisons in one breath and then the design for Jacob's home in the next. Dante would see what he could do to find these things on his own before enlisting any help. He had expected the library to be a monastery or converted wing of a cathedral, but it was a thing all its own. A 4-floor square that occupied its own block. A swooping roof shaded elegant stone pillars. 2 massive statues of pike flanked the front walk, resting on their tails, long bodies curved into an S. The high doors stood wide open. Dante headed inside, frowning, ready to be ushered away by a blustering monk or officious servant. Instead, a black rope barred his passage. A man in a clean white uniform stepped forward, hands clasped behind his back.
Day's entry will be 2 and 3, please.
Dante stopped short.
Two sills and three pennies. Just to go inside.
For the day, yes.
It would cost less than that to buy the book I need.
The man tipped back his head, eyes downcast. Yes, but the library at Moor contains many thousands of books. In those terms, it is surely a bargain.
Dante set his jaw and reached for his purse, counting out 2 silver and 3 iron. The steward glanced quickly at Lyra.
That will be per person, sir.
He sighed, paid, and walked from the foyer into a vast hall of shelved books. Old men milled through the stacks, taking down titles and thumbing cautiously through the yellow pages. A woman in white approached and offered her help finding Dante's title in exchange for 3 pennies more. Despite the prick to his sensibilities, he paid up. Under the pretense of having fallen in love with Jacob's home, he asked for any and all materials related to its planning, construction, or history. In one sense, the woman in white earned her keep. She searched with him for 3 straight hours. But that did little to mitigate Dante's frustration when she turned up nothing. After so much talk of Jacob's, he could hardly ask about poisons now, and even after 3 hours navigating the dry and dusty shelves, he had no hope of finding anything about them on his own. He left, angry. The afternoon was warm and muggy. His clothes rasped against his skin. Beside him, Lyra was placid and silent as ever. He gave her a sidelong glance.
"Don't you have anything better to do?"
She stepped over a greasy puddle.
"I'm here to keep you safe."
"From the high danger of a library. I could be paper cut at any moment."
"Belittle all you like, but you walked out in perfect health."
Back at Lolligan's, the group compared notes. Blaze and Morn hadn't seen anything all day, but they seemed highly unconcerned about their lack of progress, probably because they were both half-drunk on beer. Fan confirmed their lack of results. From what he'd gathered, Jacobs and Cassander had practically fortified themselves on Jacobs Island, and weren't expected at any dinners, parties, quorums, or appearances for weeks. Lolligan, at least, had something to show for his efforts. He hired 7 swordsmen, 3 of whom were already quartered in the servants' wing. He hadn't been the only one bringing on new arms. To hear him tell it, there had been more merchants and bureaucrats prowling the steelyards than mercenaries. Dante went to his room to stew. He was still stewing late that night when Lolligan came to his door, a clever smile matching his clever moustache. The woman in the blue mask had arrived. She didn't want to come inside. Instead, they gathered in the grass beneath a manicured tree, moonlight sifting between its spiky, gnarled branches. The scent of the lake was all around them. The woman was dressed in her midnight bodysuit, her eyes white behind its slits.
"Your decision makes us happy," she said softly. "Now we decide how to proceed."
"I'm assuming kicking in the front door is out," Blaze said. She shook her head.
"That strategy would not be effective."
"Really, because I think he'd wind up pretty dead. Pretty, really dead."
"This is the problem." "Oh, I see. You only want him half dead."
She chopped both hands downward.
"We want his death certain, but its causes unclear. We want his followers to be confused, not suspicious. Obvious assassination provokes too much sympathy. It would provoke too much of the Tagvog into crossing over to the king's side."
"Poisonous household's food," Dante said. "It'll look like they ate bad fish."
"There must be 30 people in his household," Lyra said. "Servants, his family. You'd kill them all too?"
Dante scowled over the water. On the city pier, a buoy tolled in the darkness, far off and forlorn. It was just a suggestion.
A needlessly ruthless one.
You guys act like you've never thought about how to kill someone before, Blaze said.
Set fire to his house and shoot anyone who runs outside. Bore a jug of poison down his ear as he sleeps. Hire a family of snakes to slither in through his window and give him a big fat kiss.
I like the poison one, the woman said. It is simple and deniable. Also, it does not require us to know the language of snakes.
We need to find a way to sneak into his house, then. Dante gestured across the calm waves to the dark blot of Jacob's Island. It doesn't sound like he's leaving it any time soon.
So we need to go kick in his front door, Blaze said.
Lolligan cracked his knobby knuckles.
Men like him always have other ways in and out of their castles. It makes them feel clever. I've got a few back doors myself.
I failed to find his floor plan today, Dante said. Maybe we can ask him to draw us a map. Blaze nodded.
Or save us a whole bundle of trouble and poison himself.
His weakness is vanity, said the woman in blue. Attack his weakness.
Send over a stranger who'd like a tour of his island palace, Blaze said. A stranger with blood as blue as a drowned sapphire.
The woman snapped her fingers.
We have someone we can use.
That's it, then. Dante knocked on the rough trunk of the tree. Find us a way in, and we'll do the rest.
It was a good plan. Simple, swift, and unsuspicious. And it failed before it began. The woman in blue came back the next night. She had sent a boat to Jacob's Island with a letter of introduction for a wealthy young traveller who'd yearned to see the house he'd heard so much about. The boatman hadn't been allowed to set foot on Jacob's docks. One of the four guards standing watch explained that Jacob's and Cassander were deeply engaged in critical plans, and please understand they could not be interrupted, no matter who came calling.
Back beneath the tree and the moonlight, Dante sighed hard enough to rattle the branches.
Guess it's right through the front door after all.
We could do that, Blaze said.
Or we could use my perfect idea.
Which is?
We send a letter to Cassander asking for an audience. While you grovel and apologize for Narashtovic's insubordination, I take a look around and see if there's a way in. Or a way to take care of Jacobs then and there, if that isn't too obvious.
That sounds awful. What's so perfect about it?
Two things, Blaze said. First, it attacks Cassander's arrogance. There's no way he'll turn down the chance to watch you prostrate yourself.
I think I know the second thing, Dante said.
Second, you'll hate every moment of it. I knew the second thing.
Dante glanced between the others.
Anyone have a better idea? Please have a better idea.
If they did, they kept it to themselves.
Dante stayed up late composing the most polite and beseeching letter he could stomach, then dispatched it to Cassander at Jacob's home first thing in the morning.
While he waited for the boat to come back with a response, he raised Callie on the loon. They hadn't spoken in days, and it took Dante several minutes to bring him up to speed. A carefully explicated speed. Dante told him nothing of their plans regarding Jacob's.
Unfortunate, Callie said. No doubt the king offered the damn lake traders a better deal than we could ever swing. You ought to just burn down the whole valley and be done with it.
That would show them, Dante said. Have you heard anything new from the world? The Norrin?
No. And if the clans are hoping that ignoring the ultimatum will slow Modigan down, they'll have to hope harder. He's raising troops across the north.
What are we going to do, Callie?
Don't worry, son.
The old man laughed.
If they come for Narashtovic, we'll build a boat and sail to the North Star. Or die heroically. We're never forced to face a single fate.
Dante knew son was just a phrase, but Kali had never used it towards him before. He opened his mouth, ready to tell Kali the rest of the plan to overthrow Jokobs and sway the Lakelands back to their side, but the loon went silent. Cassander replied in the afternoon. He was happy to hear from Dante, and would welcome his visit 2 days hence. Dante was glad the invitation wasn't for that same day. The cold glee in Cassander's response had Dante ready to blast a hole through the wall. Or through Cassander. Or, to kill two birds with one stone, to blast Cassander through the wall instead. Lolligan produced a vial of clear, odorless poison. Before crossing the waters to Jokobs, Blaze sealed it with wax and concealed it in his underclothes. This turned out to be uncannily wise. When they stepped off Jokobs's docks, the guards searched them top to bottom, taking Blaze's two knives. Dante smiled internally. Two small blades were nothing compared to the poison in Blaze's underpants, the nether in his own veins. The stately terraces of Jokobs's home were strangely quiet. Dante was led to a small den heavy with carpets and wall hangings that helped insulate it despite the lack of a fireplace. On the pretense Dante wanted to speak to Cassander alone, Blaze waited outside. Cassander took 30 minutes to arrive. He entered as quietly as a knife, closing the door without a click, not bothering with the formal one-step retreat of greeting under such circumstances. His smile didn't warm his eyes. "This can't be easy for you." Dante stood. "How's that? To admit to a man's face that you wronged him? That's why you're here?" "Among other things." "Good. If it weren't, this conversation would end now." Cassander sat on a backless chair, his spine straight. "Let me hear it." "The raid on your household was a mistake," Dante said, managing not to clench his teeth. "The Norren we were with deceived us. We deceived ourselves, too. I let things get out of hand." "Are you sorry?"
"That's what I just said."
"You didn't. You danced around the words like a three-legged dog. I wonder if you mean them." Dante stared past Cassander's shoulder.
"I'm sorry."
The man touched two fingers to the blonde stubble on his head. "And there it is. What now?" "I would hope my mistake hasn't endangered the long relationship between Narashtovic and Setevan. We support the Norren in many ways, but it feels like Garsk is two steps from civil war. How has it come this far?"
"Because we let it," Cassander said. "We indulged. We did not make our expectations clear. Our subjects in the southern hills did what helps themselves rather than what builds the empire as a whole. It is now our responsibility to correct them."
Dante's eyes narrowed. He forced his face to go blank. "What is your proposal?"
"Before the Setevites took hold of this country, we followed a different set of laws. When a man killed, we didn't kill him. We made him a servant to the family whose son he had taken. When he went, his older brother went with him. If he had no older brother, it would be his younger. If he had no brothers at all, it would be his best friend. The killer became a simple servant, but the older brother had a higher responsibility. If the killer didn't rise on time, his brother would beat him. If the killer misfed the family's cows, and one of the cows died, his brother would whip him. And if the killer grew frustrated and killed another member of his new family, then his brother would kill him."
Cassander held his gaze perfectly still. "The Norren have sinned. Can Narashtovic be their older brother?" The nether stirred in Dante, licking along his veins. If that is our responsibility. The young lord stood, adjusting the hem of his doublet. That is how we keep the peace.
My lord, Dante said, hoping to stall him, to give Blaze as much time as possible to continue his rounds of the house, but Cassander didn't turn. He closed the door behind him, as if Dante weren't there at all. His feet whispered down the carpeted hall. A servant arrived moments later.
I am afraid the house must be vacated, the man said. We'll find your friend and bring him to you on the docks.
As he was led from the house, Dante examined every doorway, nook, and staircase inside, but there were no obvious weaknesses. No flapdoors or person-sized cracks large enough to wriggle through with no sign of entry. Guards stood by the outer doors, some wearing Jacob's colors, others wearing the pine green of Cassander. By the time Dante reached the pier, he was ready to fling himself into the water and let it take him where it may. 10 minutes passed before Blaze appeared on the path to the docks, escorted by two guards and looking as relaxed as a 3-hour nap. The pair rowed back to Lolligan's in silence. Inside the house, Blaze grinned hugely. If your face is any indication, your meeting went just as poorly as expected. Also, you're ugly. Oh, dear. How will I ever convince you to marry me?
Maybe you can get rich?
Dante flopped down in a chair.
It would be much easier than trying to do good.
How did your search go?
Pretty great, Blaze said. I took a highly illuminating shit.
Did your brains go with it?
You were supposed to be searching for a way in.
It's funny. There I was, perched on this wooden bench, when I discovered a strong draft doing strange things to my nethers. Once I finished up my first priority, I braved my health and sanity and stuck my head down the same hole my arse had just occupied.
Really?
And how did the family reunion go?
Blaze stretched his arms wide.
The crapper was as wide as a chimney. Darkest one, too, but I could still smell.
You know what I smelled?
The inside of a toilet.
Yeah. But a surprisingly not awful one. Then I started listening. And,
you know what I heard?
Dante pressed his palms against his forehead.
My endless screams.
Splashing. Soft, gentle splashing.
Dante lifted his head.
How wide did you say it was?
At least 4 feet by 3.
Blaze grinned.
As far down as I could see.
Did I mention the bathroom was on the same floor as Jacob's bedroom?
I think it's time to find Lolligan.
According to his majordomo, the salt merchant was on business in town. When he returned, Blaze explained his suspicion that the toilet opened straight into the lake.
Lolligan's mouth fell open with laughter.
I have no doubt it does. Why didn't I think of this to begin with?
Because it's disgusting, Blaze said. We're going to need some more clothes, preferably something you won't mind having covered in shit and then dropped in the lake as we swim home.
How soon can we make this happen? Dante said. Ulwin, has she hired her troops? Will she be ready to move if Jacob's supporters smell a rat?
Lolligan nodded, smiling sharply.
There's hardly an idle mercenary in town. Everyone's been hiring new help, and it hasn't raised an eyebrow. Unrest is coming, you know.
You don't say.
Blaze bent at the waist to touch his toes, grunting as he stretched.
Guess we'd better practice climbing up a toilet.
One of the 5-story terraces that made up Lolligan's home had been disused since the previous summer, including its chimney. The next 2 days, while they weren't coordinating with Ulwin and the woman in blue, Dante, Blaze, and Lyra spent their time clambering up and down the wing's largest chimney,
A square vault, roughly 3 feet to a side and some 30 feet high. As it turned out, the enclosed space was just tight enough to make climbing easy. By bracing two or three limbs against the sooty bricks at any one time, Dante could push himself up the flue without the use of a rope or tool. Blaze and Lyra were more agile yet, scaling the vertical rise in less than 2 minutes. That left two wild cards. Finding the lakeside entry to the toilet, and widening the hole through the boards at its upper end enough to climb through. After discussion, Dante decided not to try to advance scout the entry's location. Either they would find it on the night of the attack, or they wouldn't. As for the boards up top, through experimentation in the chimney, Blaze discovered he could brace himself securely enough with 2 feet and one hand to use his remaining hand to pry loose or saw through a wooden plank with minimal noise or time. It was even easier if he could secure a rope to the seat and dangle from that while he worked. All told, Dante estimated they could swim in, climb up, break through, deliver the poison to Jacobs, and climb back out in no more than 15 minutes. "I want to kill Cassander too," he said once he made that calculation. Blaze lifted his brows. "Do you think that's a good idea?" "Extremely." "Let me put this another way. Do you think that's more or less likely to get us exposed or killed in the middle of this ridiculous mission?" "Cassander's a duke. Something like ninth in line for the kingship, with no concern or sympathy for the Norren. If he winds up the general in charge of a legion, he'll massacre them. I'm sure of it." Blaze gritted his teeth. "If one fat old man dies, well, that's what fat old men do. If a fit young duke dies on the same night, that'll stink worse than the route we're taking to get there." "You're right." Dante let the idea slip away like a pleasant dream. "But if the chance pops up, I'm taking it." That was all the more preparation they needed. They let Lolligan know they were ready. Lolligan let Ulwin know they would move that night. Dante napped through the day, waking for dinner. He dressed in a black cap and shirt and skirt and socks. The bells of midnight rolled over the inky waters. For another 2 hours, they gazed through the window at Jacob's Island, where a pair of torches continued to burn with a strange white flame. A crescent moon barely outshined the stars. Lolligan went with them to the dock. After Dante, Blaze, and Lyra settled into a small rowboat Lolligan had stripped of any decorations, the old merchant untied the rope and knelt on the planks of the dock. His wrinkled face was taut, as if he were finally realizing the significance of the hour to come.
"I hope we're doing the right thing," he whispered. "Good luck."
He threw them the rope. Blaze caught it and coiled it in the prow, then shoved off and grabbed an oar. Lyra took up another. Dante knelt up front, watching the black water. They rowed slowly, the splashes of their paddles no louder than the ripples and gentle waves. As slowly as a mounting storm, Jacob's Island grew in size. A black mound lit at its lakeward-facing point by two white lights. The rowboat swung wide around the dark side of the island and angled in to where the five-layered house sat flush against the water. Miles across the lake, a white light bloomed in the darkness, riding many feet above the surface. Dante hunched forward and squinted until he was certain the light was moving against the steady backdrop of the far shore. "There's another ship out there." Blaze pulled his paddle from the water.
"What kind?"
"It looks big. Too far away to tell."
"Then we'll keep moving."
The boat crept forward. Dante split his attention between the distant vessel and the approaching island. He could make out the manor's curling eaves now, the glint of its windows. Once, a man paced along a balcony, and Dante coiled the nether in his hands, ready to strike the man dead if he called out a warning. The figure disappeared inside. Blaze steered the boat to within a few yards of the short, rocky cliff supporting the house, where a guard would practically have to lean off a deck's railing to spot them. An outlying face of the house ran straight down into the water. Somewhere below it, a hole would open into the flue of the toilet. Dante glanced back across the lake. The vessel had cut the distance between them in half. He still couldn't make out its hull, just that strange white lantern hanging from its prow. A light that matched the ones on the northern tip of Jacob's Island. "That's what Jacobs and Cassander have been waiting for," he whispered over the wash of the waves. "That boat is coming here. It'll land within an hour."
Chapter 15. Blaze shrugged off his cloak, grinning grimly at the distant ship.
"Then I suppose we'll have to hurry."
Dante twisted his face to him.
"You still want to go through with this?
Do you think the contents of that boat will make this any easier tomorrow?"
Above, the house was silent, dark.
"No, this is our best chance.
So quit arguing, and let me go climb up that toilet."
Blaze shucked off his cloak and shoes and slipped over the side of the rowboat. He paddled along the flat rock of the house, then bobbed up, filled his lungs, and disappeared beneath the black water. Two bubbles popped to the surface. Water soughed against the land. Toward the city, the buoy clanged to itself, as far away and irrelevant as childhood. Dante loosened the small leather bag around his neck, fished out his loon, and turned the brooch to Morn's setting. He pulsed it once. 2 seconds later, he tried again.
"Yes?"
Morn answered softly.
"There's a ship coming this way," Dante whispered. "I don't like the looks of it."
"What should we do about it?"
"Get ready."
"That's unhelpfully unspecific,"
Morn said. "Tell Lolligan and our masked friend," Dante said. "I'm sure they'll come up with something."
He cut the connection. The talk had distracted him from the fact Blaze still hadn't returned. The water was open, silent. Dante's gaze leapt to every splash and ripple. How long had Blaze been gone? Well over a minute. Closer to two. What if he'd gotten caught underwater, stuck in a pipe or a grate?
Dante leaned over the lip of the boat, rocking it. Stars shimmered on the water.
Should he dive in?
He returned his loon to his pouch, where it clicked against the wax-sealed vial and cloth-wrapped lockpicks. He stripped off his cloak and took 3 long breaths, flooding his body with air. He filled his lungs a fourth time and threw one leg over the side. Below him, a pale face broke the water. Dante tipped back into the boat, banging his ribs on the bench. Blaze grabbed the edge of the boat and peeped over the edge.
"Found it."
Dante righted himself, glancing at the house's balconies.
"How do you know?"
"Because it smelled like shit and I wanted to die. Pass me the bag and I'll get the rope up."
Dante handed him the bag with the rope and pry bar. Blaze tucked it under his arm, saluted, and disappeared under the water. Lyra paddled to keep them away from the rocks while Dante watched the white light across the lake. The boat it was attached to was a dark blot on the moonlit waves. It had advanced fractionally by the time Blaze returned and gestured them into the lake. The cold water gripped Dante like an unrelenting hand. He fought not to gasp as his head slipped below the water. Beneath the surface, Blaze's kicking feet churned a trail of bubbles. Dante followed them like a lifeline. A broad shadow loomed ahead. Blaze dove deeper, disappearing beneath it. Dante's ears popped. His heels banged and scraped against something hard and scratchy. The ceiling pressed above him, an unbroken plane of rough-cut stone. Air bubbled from his mouth,
He flattened himself against the stone, struggling, as if he believed he could swim through rock as easily as the black water. The last of his air burst from his nose. He rolled over to hammer at the stone. A hand grabbed his wrist and yanked him forward. He rose into a tight square, brushing himself between two warm bodies and bursting from the water with a gasp. The stink hit him a moment later, a choking scent of feces in all stages of aging. Blaze and Lyra crowded beside him, breathing through their mouths. Something brushed Dante's face. He poured it away, felt the wet rope. He could barely see his own hand. High above, the sliver of moon trickled through a skylight above the square hole of the seating platform. Small things bobbed around his arms and chest. He was glad for the darkness. Blaze maneuvered around him and grabbed the rope. A foot bonked Dante's face. The rope swayed in the water, stirring the trapped sewage. Dante craned his neck to keep his face clear. Above, Blaze scrabbled against the slick walls. Something plopped into the water. The rope jiggled. Blaze gave a soft whistle. Dante grabbed the rope and climbed up, the spatter of water echoing up the flue. The rope swayed, banging him into the tight walls, dislodging sludge and coating him in foul stink. He breathed shallowly, but could still taste it on the back of his throat. He paused halfway up to gag.
"Do not do whatever you're doing,"
Lyra whispered from below. He continued up. The square of moonlight expanded. Blaze had pried away enough boards to crawl into the bathroom without squeezing his shoulders. After the ascent through the toilet flue, the tight room felt palatial. Water splashed below, signaling Lyra's climb. Blaze stood on the bathroom rug, stripped to his underpants.
"What are you doing?" Dante whispered. "I don't want to walk around covered in shit. I don't care if it's the fashion."
Blaze nodded at the rugs.
"Don't want to leave tracks either."
Dante peeled off his shirt, skirt, socks and gloves until he was down to his small clothes, the pouch at his neck, and a long knife tied to his thigh. Lyra emerged from the toilet, hopped to the floor, and stared.
"Like it's nothing you haven't seen before," Blaze said.
She smirked and stepped out of her outer clothes. Dante wadded the soiled linen into a ball, dropped it down the chute with a splash, and wiped his hands on the carpet. They drew their knives. Blaze padded to the door and eased it open. Silence spilled into the bathroom, the kind that leaves your ears ringing with its purity. Blaze slipped into the hallway. Light lined the cracks around the door down the hall, but it was otherwise as dark as the night. Blaze crouched forward. A cough spotted from elsewhere in the house, muffled by doors and space. Blaze shrank against the wall, but the coughing stopped, consumed once more by that perfect silence. The hallway terminated at a wide wooden door. Blaze nodded significantly and reached for the handle. It opened, sparing Dante the trouble of fumbling with the picks in his pouch. Inside, moonlight coursed through unshuttered windows, painting the room in silver-blue shadows. Jacob snored thickly from amidst a canopy bed with the same tented peaks as his roof. Blaze eased the door shut. Dante took the vial from his pouch and clamped it under his armpit to warm it. Blaze cocked his head, gesturing towards the bed. Dante held up his palms and shook his head. The closer to body temperature the poison was, the less likely Jacobs would wake before the fluid ensured he never would. Dante waited half a minute for the vial to warm, then crept to the bed. Silk sheets rumpled around Jacob's middle. White hairs curled on his slack chest. His snores smelled like sour beer. Dante ran his thumbnail around the vial's tiny neck, breaking the wax. He pulled the glass stopper and leaned over the sleeping man, but was struck by a moment
of moral vertigo. He was about to kill this man.
Did this man deserve it? Why had Jacobs crossed to Cassander's camp? For personal gain, promises of riches and titles, or to avert the king's wrath for his homeland of Galador? If the latter, how could Dante fault him for placing the safety of his friends, family, and countrymen over a horde of strange giants living far to the east? But if those were the rules, nor could Dante be faulted for placing Narashtovic and the Norrin above the people of Galador. Whether Jacobs had signed his treaty to join the ranks of royalty, to preserve his people, or both, he must have felt very secure as he shook Cassander's hand. He was tucked away in the Lakeland Rifts, a week's hard travel from the flashpoints at the borders. He must have smiled. He must have thought himself very wise. But every choice carried consequences, and the reach of war knows no boundaries. Dante dripped the clear liquid into the old man's ear. Jacob stirred, sluggish, pawing at the side of his head. He didn't open his eyes. Dante waited for him to settle back into the covers, then poured another dose. Jacob's grey hair grew slick and damp. The thin fluid seeped into the folds of his neck. He let out a long, ragged breath. His chest slumped in thin and shallow breaths. He seemed to wither, to retract into his own flesh. Bright parchment rested on his bedside table, inscribed with fancy script and fresh ink. Dante folded the papers into his pouch. He gestured toward the door.
Jacobs shot up in bed, shrieking. Dante moaned. Jacobs shook his hoary head like a dog clawing at his ear. He screamed again. A shudder racked his body, jiggling his hairy stomach. He hunched forward, bearish, and dribbled foam from his lips. His wild eyes fixed on Dante.
"Who are you? Help me! Bring me water!"
Blaze leapt forward and socked Jacobs in the temple, thumping him into the sheets. He gurgled. His chest shuddered and went still.
"That was gross," Blaze muttered. "I think it's time to..."
The door barged open, spilling light and an armed guard into the room. Lyra's knife caught him in the neck. He stumbled to the floor, blood fanning onto the thick carpet. Blaze scooped up his sword and blew out the candle he'd dropped. Shouts rose from down the hall. Dante cut the back of his left arm, smiling against the pain. Nether swelled in him like an incoming tide. He rushed out the door. Blaze jogged after him.
"Where are you going?"
"To find Cassander."
"Is that secret code for get the hell out of here? Because right now..."
Feet thumped down the dark hallway. Swords glinted. Dante lashed out with a blade of raw nether. Just before it reached the guards, it burst in a shower of white sparks, sizzling away. The pale glow lit Cassander's face, ghost-like, smiling.
"Oh, shit," Dante said.
Cassander stepped forward, flanked by guards. "Most men of quality teach their sons to swing a sword. But what's a blade compared to this?"
He thrust a spear of white ether at Dante's heart. Dante shouted in horror.
There were few nethermancers he truly feared. It was possible the king had a pet sorcerer or three with the power to beat Dante 7 times out of 10, but Dante's power was unearthly, particularly for his age. In fact, throughout all of Gask, the list of nether slingers who could stand toe-to-toe with him and expect to walk away alive might start and end with Kelly. This was not true of the ether. Every single ethermancer, no matter how raw and untrained, posed a mortal threat to Dante. He knew too little of the ether to fight it with any efficiency. He could oppose it with brute force, sure, slinging gobs and walls of shadows at the incoming light. In most cases, His talent with the Nether was strong enough to overcome his disadvantage, nonetheless. He could tire his opponent out and then strike, or simply overwhelm them, striking with a tide of Nether too fast and cold for any but the strongest to resist. If he and his ether-slinging enemy were anywhere closely matched, however, victory was far from a given. In that case, the enemy could wear him down, forcing him to expend clumsy amounts of Nether to avoid dying on deliberately spare thrusts of ether. Dante could be overwhelmed, too. Even losing his focus for a fraction of a second could mean the ether would be on him before he knew what was happening. He'd trained to overcome this weakness, but it was a weakness that could only be patched over so far, and Cassander appeared to be uncommonly strong. Dante met Cassander's attack with a wild charge of Nether. The two energies flared into a puff of light. Dante fell back, keeping the shadows close at hand. He tried to study the ether a dozen times throughout the years, but each time he found he could no more manipulate its solid, steady presence than he could give birth. He would rather face a mother bear in her den than a trained and able ethermancer. A knife whipped through the air, burying itself in Cassander's shoulder. The man dropped to his knee with a sigh. "I like blades, personally." Blaze shifted his stolen sword to his empty right hand. "They don't care who they cut." He grabbed Dante by his bare shoulder and yanked him down the hall. Glass shattered from Jacob's room. Lyra stood in front of a gaping hole in the window, gesturing with her knife. Blaze slung his sword at Jacob's motionless body and dived headlong out the window. Dante followed, yanking his pouch from his neck and holding it above his head. He plunged into the cold lake, water smashing around his head. Lyra burst into the water beside him. "Where's the rowboat?" he said. "Off on a journey of its own." Blaze spun in the water, orienting himself toward Lolligan's. "It's time to see if we've absorbed anything from all these fish we've been eating." He leaned into a crawl stroke. Dante turned on his side, paddling with one hand while he held the pouch aloft with the other. They went 100 yards from the island before the first arrows whooshed across the darkness. Their points were bright with fire, illuminating the foam of Dante's kicks. The first few arrows missed handily. The next volley slashed into the waters, mere feet away, fizzling and popping. Dante sensed a cool power gathering on the deck of the house. He turned to face it, kicking in place. A bolt of white ether streaked through the night. Dante punched his free hand from the water. Shadows streamed forward. As they met the ether, the sizzle drowned out the hissing arrows. Dante continued swimming. Cassander didn't attempt another attack. Dante and the others swam from bow range, arrows plunking into the water behind them. The island fell away into the night. Across the lake, the secret ship and its white lantern advanced toward the dead merchant's home. Lanterns lined Lolligan's shores. Dante hauled himself onto the rocks, chest heaving, shivering so hard he thought his arms would shake loose from his torso. Someone swaddled him in blankets. Hands guided the three of them to a roaring fire in Lolligan's private quarters. A servant pulled away Dante's sodden underwear and replaced them with a full set of dry clothes. Under a mound of blankets to his left, Blaze's teeth chattered aloud. To Dante's right, Lyra stumbled while stepping into her skirt, her limbs too stiff to function. She dropped below the blanket a servant had hoisted for privacy, landing hard on her knees and palms, breasts swinging between her bent elbows. The servant rushed to cover her. Dante had barely pulled on his pants when the doors opened. Lolligan, Ulwin, and the woman in midnight blue rushed into the room.
"Is it complete?"
the woman said behind her mask.
"In the sense that Jacobs is dead, yes,"
Dante said. A shudder tore through his muscles.
"Is there another sense?" "Sight, hearing, smell and touch," Blaze said. "I know we engaged at least that many. The guys on their side probably tasted some blood, too."
Dante breathed out slowly. His shudders ceased except for a twitch in his calf.
It's not over. Cassandra saw us.